Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 3 of Teacher People, the podcast that helps you know your teachers as people. I am very fortunate to have my guest here with me today. This is someone that is well known throughout the Chelsea community and is really just almost a famous figure in our school building these days, Mr. Lonnie Mitchell. Mr. Mitchell, welcome to Teacher People.
Well, thank you. Let's wait for the applause to go down a
little
bit.
Yes, we'll edit that in later.
Yeah.
You've obviously been in Chelsea for quite a while, right?
Yes.
How many years is this for you?
I signed my teaching contract on 8/8/88, so it's been 31 years now.
Huh. How do you remember that specific date, just out of curiosity?
8/8/88. I don't know.
That's a tough
one. That's a hard one to remember.
Yeah, it's like English coming up with a mnemonic device to remember that or something.
Exactly.
Okay. So, so several decades in the Chelsea School District. Have those all been at the high school?
Yes, they have been at the high school, at both high schools, the old high school and the new high school. I was at the old high school for about 10 years.
Okay.
Now it's no longer called the new high school because it's over 20 years old.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I didn't think about the timeline of that, but you've been there twice as long then, huh?
I guess I have been. Yes.
So that's obviously one huge change you've witnessed in Chelsea. But my guess is that when you compare Chelsea schools in 2019 to 1988, there are probably a couple other pretty big differences, wouldn't you say? What are some of the things you've noticed change in the school district? Or maybe are there some things that you've seen remain a constant during that time?
I'd say the biggest change, believe it or not, between the old high school and the new high school is that kids literally act better at the new high school than the old high school. When we had the old high school with the setup of students walking between classes, it was hard to police the area. There was snowball fights all the time. There were fights all the time. There was people stepping outside and smoking cigarettes all the time. There was... the best way I could describe it is just chaos was outside. Mm-hmm. I don't know how the assistant principal would be able to keep track of what was going on in between passing periods. Mm-hmm. For those people that aren't familiar with the old high school, you literally walked from class to class going outside. And students, when they are kept indoors, like the new high school, they literally act better because there's not really that as much opportunities to have problems. Mm-hmm. And just the fact that it is well kept and the old one was a little bit run down and people take pride in the new school, even though it's 20 years old. You can just tell that people are quite proud of the new school.
Mm-hmm. And you've had a little bit of experience in other school districts, in Texas particular, right? I know you coached in Texas. Did you also teach in the classroom there?
Yeah, I taught four classes of math. I was basically pre-algebra and algebra down there. They wanted, once again, this is a different philosophy in Texas. They wanted the coaches to work on their sport rather than really focus on their subject matter. So they just gave me the lower level. I think I had a consumer math class because they knew that the coaches would handle the discipline. Mm-hmm. And there was no way I was ever going to be able to teach Algebra 2, pre-calculus, or honors Algebra 2. Down there. They wanted me to focus my time, not worried about math. They wanted me to focus my time
on what's really important.
On what's really important, yes. The football, the Texas high school football.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Well, I know just kids talk all the time about how much they love hearing you tell stories about the old high school building or what our town was like or just incidents that came up over your time in Chelsea High School. So it's so clear you've been at this for a long time. You really have, I think, mastered the approach. You get kids to buy into what you're doing. They enjoy being in your presence and in your class. They learn a lot from you, but you also find the right level of challenge for them. So I think they feel like they grow. I'm just curious, selfishly, as a teacher, do you think that there are a couple, I don't know, secrets to teaching that you've stumbled upon in your career? Is there like a method to your success or a, you know, two or three sort of touchstone or key things that you try to remember as a teacher to be so effective?
Yeah, I think that when I was younger, I really had some excellent coaches and teachers down in Texas. And so one of the things that I felt was my strength was I really learned from them. I wasn't stuck on my own philosophy. I wanted to watch what coaches and teachers did and then pick up their good qualities and also see what some bad qualities were. And I wanted to make sure that I was not picking up some of the bad qualities. So I was always observing. I guess one of my philosophies, and I tell the students this, is that I don't like to teach 2 days in a row the same. You know, there's a lot of different methods in teaching, same as in English. But can you imagine that if every single day you taught English the exact same way? It would probably be boring, no matter how the statistics show this is the best way to teach. You probably want to change it around. I deal a lot with teaching students who learn differently. And we do a lot of different methods. Mm-hmm. We'll work alone. We'll work in partners. I'll tell you who to work with. We'll work in groups of four. If we worked in groups of four every day, that would get old. If we worked, sit down and be quiet, that would get old. Mm-hmm. So I like to change it around so that there are no 2 days in a row the same. I don't like to say, okay, here, do 72 minutes of class. I like to move it into shifts. Okay, here we're going to do this. Mm-hmm. So students, I'll tell you one teaching secret. I learned that you should have some sort of change 1 minute for each age that they are. In other words, if you are dealing with a 14-year-old student, you better change things around every 14 minutes. If you're dealing with an 18-year-old student, you should change it around every 18 minutes. Well, if we have a 72-minute class, you can see that you'll end up having to change things around four times for a senior, but five times if they're a freshman. Mm-hmm. So you need that extra change when they're younger. Mm-hmm. And you do need to change around. I can't imagine just going 72 minutes and just walking in the class and say, okay, we're going to do this and this only for 72 minutes. Hmm.
This seems to align really nicely. One of the things the kids talk a lot about in your class is the Something Different Fridays. And that seems to maybe be like the manifestation of that philosophy just in a larger format. Can you tell us a little bit about, is that where that came from? And how did you get the idea for Something Different Fridays? For people that haven't been in your class, you know, what do you try to accomplish on days like that?
Well, on Something Different Fridays, I really like to still show them math, but not necessarily from the curriculum. And then there is so much math that is involved in psychology. And so I get into the psychology, and I then show them how that is related with math. People that know me, students that have seen me, teach the Piaget. I mean, we are trying. The reason why you take algebra is to get them into the adult thinking. You're not memorizing anymore. That's the middle school stage. We're trying to get you into thinking, mm-hmm. into critical thinking, into abstract thought, into making thinking figuratively, not literally. And so we'll spend a couple of times on Fridays talking about Piaget, and I have them take a test on where they stand as far as being a thinker or a memorizer, if they're a middle school type of thinker or a high school type of thinker. And when I say high school type of thing, I'm talking about being in the adult stage. And so we spend a lot of time with that, and then I'll show them, okay, here's what it deals with as far as math is concerned. Let me do one for you, just give you an example. Here's the difference. I don't mean to put pressure on you here. Okay, what is 4 times 5?
4 times 5 is 20.
Okay, why is 4 times 5 20?
Well, I think probably I go back to memorizing timetables in elementary school, and so that was kind of instant, but I did, because I felt the pressure of you staring at me there, I did do a little bit of addition. I added 5 together 4 times. I double-checked myself.
And you would be surprised how many freshmen, or even older, will refuse to answer the question. They'll just sit there and go, because I memorized it. Mm-hmm. And the memorized is the middle school type of thinking, or even younger than that, whereas the critical thinking is visualizing, I've got to add 5 fours together or 4 fives together. So you passed the adult test. Congratulations.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Makes me think of when I first learned multiplication. It was at a varsity basketball game in Grand Rapids, and I learned it in connection to free throws. And I knew that every time a player got fouled, they would go to the free throw line to shoot 2 shots. And I told my dad, okay, so if they get fouled 3 times, then they're going to get 3 sets of 2 shots. So they get 6 total. And that was how I learned multiplication. So I guess what you would say is from a very young age, I was basically like a genius, right?
I would call you a genius. Yeah, of course.
Okay, well, I appreciate you giving me that compliment there. Well, it's really interesting to listen to you tell us all these stories and hear so much about your past. I know that's part of what your students love about being in your class as well. But for the sake of the podcast, we're going to try to move us into our first structured segment here. For those who aren't familiar with Teacher People, we basically have a 5-segment podcast where I ask each guest to bring to the table something that mimics the warm-ups I do with my AP language classes. So on Mondays in class, we listen to a song. We call it our Monday music of some artist that for some reason resonates with us. On Tuesdays, we watch a trailer for a TV series or movie that's coming out and discuss it. Wednesdays, we talk about a world current event. On Thursdays, we do a throwback Thursday where we talk about something from our past. And on Friday, we do a Friday question of the day, which is just an open-ended question that everyone can get involved in discussing. So I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Mitchell and just ask him to share a little bit about what song he has selected for our Monday music.
Well, the song actually is from 1967. It came from a movie. The movie was called To Sir With Love, and it starred Sidney Poitier, and he played an American school teacher who ended up going off to England, and he had to teach some tough hooligans, high school kids, and he ended up treating them with respect. He treated them great, and they in turn ended up absolutely loving him. And so that had a big influence on my life. It would be very similar to people who are now in their 40s, school teachers. They loved the Robin Williams
Dead Poets Society.
Mm-hmm. And I would say that my age group really loved To Sir With Love. Mm-hmm. It really was a very moving display of having the interaction between the students and the teacher. The song is called To Sir With Love, sung by Lulu, who played one of the hooligan's girlfriends, and she basically was saying, how can we thank you for everything that you have done for us? I felt that way both as a teacher and as a student. I wanted to tell that to other teachers, and I know that other students have wanted to tell me, you know, how can we thank you for everything that you have done? Taking me from crayons to perfume is some of the words in the song. It's not a long song, but it's a very powerful song. I, even though it was in 1967, I really heard it more in the 70s when I was in high school, because the movie was always on a Friday after school movie. So it was just really neat to hear both as a student and then to hear it nowadays. Mm. And it really resonated with me.
Sure. I thought you were going to say maybe it prepared you to deal with all those hooligans at Chelsea
High School.
Yeah, the
hooligans of Chelsea. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah.
Yes, taught you a lot. Well, my guess is that for most of our listeners, this is probably the first time that they have ever heard this song. So
probably. Check with your parents.
This is Lulu singing To Sir With Love.
In my mind,
Okay, that was To Sir With Loved, performed by Lulu. And I know for me, that was one of the first times I'd ever heard that song. It sounds like this is one that you've heard on more than one occasion. I'm curious, when you hear that again for the umpteenth time, do you have a lot of memories flooding back? Like, does that put you in a certain time and place or make you think of a certain memory from your life?
Well, there was one particular time where I would teach this class for 2 years, both in honors freshmen and then honors sophomores. And they were asking me, what kind of gift would you like for, I think it was Valentine's Day. And I was like, I don't know. You know, they were asking me in general, not necessarily for me, but asking me in general. Mm-hmm. I go, I don't know. I said, just show appreciation. I just throw a bunch of meat on my my desk, just a bunch of steak. And so on the last day of school, their senior year, their last day of school, they were now calculus students. They were about to walk out and graduate. They come walking into my class, and four at a time, they came to my desk, and they threw down a hunk of meat. They explained to my class. They interrupted my class of freshmen, and they told the story about how 2 years before that, I said, just give me a hunk of meat. And it was the neatest thing. I almost started crying and everything like that, how students trying to find a way to say thank you for taking them from crayons to perfume. Huh. So that was neat.
I have so many questions right now. So was it cooked meat or raw meat?
They were frozen rocks. Uh-huh. Okay. But they were good.
And so did you cook them later? Did you end up eating the meat?
Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, yes. Huh. That was neat.
I feel like you just set yourself up for, at the end of the school year, a bunch of students walking in and repeating this tradition. Do they know that this happened to you? Is this one of your
stories? No, it's one story. I don't think I've really told that much.
All right. Well, students, you are on alert now for what to do. So I know that just in talking to you, it sounds like, though you don't consider yourself a musician, you are a big music fan.
I am
like
a
listening
huge music
to a lot
fan.
Of different music. Can you tell us, like, I don't know, maybe in particular, like, do you have an all-time favorite album that you just wore out on your record player or listen to?
I would say that the one that I probably played the most was The Who Quadrophenia. It was a double album, and I was just absolutely amazed at all the music that was involved in that, because they had every single musical instrument involved, and it told a story, and it was by The Who, and it was just phenomenal. Every song. I think another album would end up being Pink Floyd, The Wall, that was in Dark Side of the Moon. Those were just two phenomenal albums.
And you saw a couple of those bands in concert, right?
Yeah, I saw, let's see, I don't think I saw The Who, but I've seen Pink Floyd. And living in the Detroit area, we had so much access to concerts. I went to quite a few concerts, to Pine Knob, to Kobo, to all of those different videos. Silverdome, saw Led Zeppelin at the Silverdome. So did my wife. So, yeah, we went to a lot of concerts.
Do you have an all-time best concert you've ever been to?
Actually, the best one, the worst one I went to was Led Zeppelin. Mm-hmm. And it was the one I was looking forward to the most, but it was Silverdome was brand new, and they were little ants down below, and the sound was terrible, and so on. And I would say that the best concert that I went to was to Bruce Springsteen. That was the last concert I went to, and it was just probably about 6-7 years ago. Blind luck, we ended up being right on the stage, or right next to the stage, and we had to actually look up at Springsteen. And, you know, I've never been 4 feet from a lead singer of something of that magnitude, and it was just awesome. Absolutely, my neck hurt for about a week because we were actually looking up the whole time, but it was just phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. He was a fantastic entertainer.
Well, moving along further in our podcast, for our second segment, we ask our visitor to choose a trailer for a TV show or movie that he wants to discuss, and I'll turn it over to Mr. Mitchell. I actually don't know what you've chosen for this either, so I'll let you explain.
Well, I just think that the TV movie, I just tried to combine the two into one, and once again, dealing, I guess, with my life, was the TV show and the movie Friday Night Lights. When the author of the book moved to Texas, I was coaching in Texas at the time, and I think that the movie ended up showing how crazy and insane high school football is down in Texas. Mm-hmm. And the movie was true to form, and it really gave the idea about how the whole town comes around. Now, I was coaching in Corpus Christi area, which is about 8 hours away from where he was in Odessa. So that would be like from here to Nashville, Tennessee. So I was never in the Odessa area during that time. But mm-hmm. we were in the playoffs. We were in what was called 4A when Odessa Permian was in 5A. And so to see that movie, it just reminds me so much of our own scenario. Mm-hmm. And how far we went in the playoffs as well.
Okay, great. Well, I know, yeah, a lot of students know this as it's been done as a movie and a TV series since then. But here is our Tuesday trailer. This is Friday Night Lights.
Gentlemen, the hopes and dreams of an entire town are riding on your shoulders. You may never matter more than you do right now.
It's time.
Now, if you want to win state, you're going to have to beat a team of giants, a team of monsters over in Dallas that outweigh you about 30 pounds a man. This is real, sincere warfare. We're in the business of winning.
Run, 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 run! Yes, sir!
Should we believe the hype?
What hype?
The hype about Booby Miles.
Now, hype is something that's not for real. I'm all real.
What's it like being the quarterback? I mean, this is a big responsibility for a 17-year-old kid. Do you think you can handle it?
No, that is not acceptable.
Hope so.
Your dad played at Permian. What's it like to be the son of a local legend?
Tell me why you can't hold on to the ball.
Maybe this can help.
Hold on to football.
Next question.
With a ball carry. Give me just one touchdown. Just one.
Hey, son, come here. Where you going?
You want me to go in, coach?
You don't want a helmet? My goodness gracious.
Do you want to play college ball? Do you want to get out of this town?
I think so.
Well, why aren't you doing something about it?
We gotta lighten up. We're 17.
You think it's just a game? I think you're scared just like the rest of us.
I've seen you fight. I've seen you not quit. Can you give me a great effort and just a little bit more? Can we be perfect?
So let's take care of it!
One day, when you look back at this time, I dare you to beat it. I dare you.
All right, that was the trailer for the film version of Friday Night Lights, which we realized watching came out quite a while ago, maybe before some of our students were born even, I would think.
Oh, gosh, I didn't even think of that. But, yeah, so then the TV show has come out, and I think some of the students, they still talk about watching that show.
Mm-hmm.
The show was... a little bit soap opera for me, but it gave my wife a real good idea about what life was like down there. Mm-hmm. She really enjoyed the show, not necessarily for the football, but for the other aspects of the mm-hmm. show. It seemed like every single game was a last-second touchdown, uh-huh. and that really isn't that much in real life. There might mm-hmm. be one or two a year, but
sure.
But here they had every game like that, so...
So looking at that trailer, I'm wondering if for you, because I think so many people know you spent time in Texas, you coached football in Texas, do you see certain images in that trailer that maybe trigger memories for you? Like, for instance, I think there was a shot in there in the Astrodome with a team getting ready to play. Like, does that make you think back to times you coached there? I think I've heard you talk about coaching in Cowboy Stadium or the old Cowboy Stadium before Jerry World. Being in a Friday night football stadium in Texas for a high school game, do some of those things come flooding back to you when
well,
you see that trailer?
The big thing is the Friday night lights. I mean, anytime we had to go scout to go see another school, we wouldn't need directions on how to get there. Texas is so flat, you could see. They would put the lights on at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, mm-hmm. and you could literally see the lights 30 miles away. Mm-hmm. That's why it was called Friday Night Lights. And so You don't see that at Chelsea or Dexter. You don't, because if the lights are on, you don't notice that until you're right on top of it. But mm-hmm. here, you just it's a beacon. Mm-hmm. It really is. Mm-hmm. And just the atmosphere of, yeah, I mean, there was times I would have to catch a plane and watch a game at Texas Stadium mm-hmm. and then have to catch a plane to come back so that I could be there for films mm-hmm. the next day, playing in the Astrodome. I mean, we played a scrimmage once, and they changed the venue, and there were still 3,000 people there for a scrimmage mm-hmm. before the season even started. Mm-hmm. And I still have the newspaper article about mm-hmm, that. Mm-hmm. And they do talk about 3,000 people showed up for a preseason scrimmage mm-hmm. against another team. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it's just something else.
Yeah, I remember when I was able to visit Mitchell Farm down in Texas, walking in and the first thing seeing on the TV, it's the middle of June or July, so it's not even football season, and there's a replay of a Texas high school football game on at 3:30 in the afternoon. It just kind of was a signal to me of, all right, this is a big-time thing down there. Do you have, in your time as a coach, a game that stands out as, like, maybe the biggest game that you ever participated in?
Oh, gosh, there were so many of them, so many down in Texas as well as the ones in Michigan. You know, I was a coach in Michigan when we went to the very first playoff game, Chelsea's very first playoff game. We ended up beating Lake Odessa, and the head coach there, some former students might know, the head coach was Mark Elms, and that's how he found out about Chelsea and applying for the job and getting the job in Chelsea.
If you can't beat them, join them.
Exactly. That was the philosophy there, I guess. So mm-hmm. he came over, and I ended up coaching with them mm-hmm. for a few years.
Okay. What about one of the images that I know the listeners couldn't see in the trailer is of a coach pulling a player aside and giving him a little bit of guidance or kind of mentoring him off the football field. Do you have, in your time as a coach, a player that stands out as maybe the most outstanding player you ever had the chance to coach or be around?
I mean, there were a lot of players that ended up going on to Division I down in Texas, and then we've had some with success in Michigan as well. So I really don't want to, you know, focus on one person mm-hmm. Who ended up doing better than others. Mm-hmm. But we've had success at both of those areas.
Okay. And I thought, I remember, I don't want to necessarily make this your answer to that question, but didn't you have a connection to Drew Brees?
You know, I never did coach Drew because he was too young. Mm-hmm. That's how well I've known Drew.
First name basis here.
Yeah, Drew and his brother Reed were my football managers down there. They were, the head coach was Coach Akins, and he was... an icon down there. They've named the football stadium after him. They've named the main street after Coach Akins. It's Akins Drive. Mm-hmm. And so Drew was his grandson, Drew and Reed. And they would show up during August before they would start school. They lived in Austin. And so every year they would be with us. And I'd watch those two boys grow and to become the men that they are now, both Drew and Reed. Mm-hmm.
Well, moving on, we're about halfway through the podcast, and it's time to ask Mr. Mitchell to offer up his Wednesday World, a current event or a topic that he's either interested in or wants to share a little bit more about. So, Mr. Mitchell, you can go ahead.
Well, I am quite fascinated by current events, and the big one going on right now would be the process that is involved with the impeachment. Mm-hmm. Whether you are for it or against it, I think that students... should embrace learning about the process involved. It just reminds me so much. I used to live in Washington, D.C., and that was during the time that Nixon was in trouble with the Watergate. And that was my current events class, was to read about Watergate. Mm-hmm. Watergate was discovered by the Woodward and Bernstein guys from the Washington Post. Mm-hmm. And so... to learn about the process of what has happened in the past. I mean, you learn about the impeachment, you learn about Watergate. Mm-hmm. You learn about Watergate, you learn about Bill Clinton's impeachment, mm-hmm. and you learn about Andrew Johnson's impeachment, which was a fascinating impeachment. Mm-hmm. His own party wanted to get rid of him. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have enough votes because the other party voted to keep him in. Mm-hmm. And you start learning about those things and learning about the past just because of base what's going on in the present is just absolutely fascinating.
Well, for a student who maybe is disconnected from the impeachment proceedings going on right now, and someone that maybe doesn't follow current events as closely, like, do you think that, how would you recommend a student even begin following this? It's a really tricky landscape right now with different media sources maybe taking different sides or saying different things, and you have Twitter, you have all these different outlets for kind of hearing what's going on. Do you, have you found a way to navigate that really difficult
landscape?
Well,
I try to tell people that don't sit there and hang on one station. Try and change it around so that you can hear both points of view. Once again, that comes to the empathetic part of me moving around. Okay, this is what this side says. Now listen to the other side. You know, if you're going to listen to Fox News, then also listen to MSN. You got to listen to both sides. If you don't listen to both sides, all you're going to hear is just one's going to bash the other. And you're not going to get anything from that. You really aren't.
And just maybe one last question here. I know that Twitter is a major source of news for a lot of people in the world today. I'm curious, do you have a Twitter account?
I have one, but I don't use it for the current events, that's for sure.
So who are some of your follows? Who do you like to read politically or otherwise?
Not politically. I do not get into that with the Twitter because it's, oh my goodness gracious. But I tend to get into the Twitter so that I can keep track with the sports. That's the big thing. I enjoy it if Chelsea's playing an away game and somebody has updated me on Twitter on what the score is. That's the main reason why I'll use Twitter. I like to congratulate a lot of the students on Twitter as well, the athletes or the choir or the orchestra. If they've done a really good job, I like to say congratulations on Twitter because I can't go up to every person and say good job.
All right, well, we're going to move ahead into the fourth segment of Teacher People, which is our Throwback Thursday. This is a chance for our guest to talk about either a memory from his past or a story that he wants to share. Mr. Mitchell, I know that you are full of different stories from the past. People love to hear you share them, but what is one that you wanted to bring to us today?
Well, I always like to talk about meeting my wife, because a lot of people know her. She works at the high school. She's a parapro. She's hanging around the art department a lot. And I just really like talking about how we met, even though I was at the math wing at our high school, and she doesn't know where the math wing is, and I didn't know where the art department was, and she was always hanging around the art department. So we didn't really know each other in high school, but we got to know each other through our 25th reunion, and so rumor has it I chased her down, And we found out there was so many things that we had that were in common. It was pretty funny, and there were just a lot of things. She worked at the Kmart World Headquarters, and so did my dad. That's why we both lived in Troy. That's where the Kmart World Headquarters is, or was. And then we also had, I had a Saturn. I drove a Saturn, and in my Saturn was her owner's manual. She does the owner's manuals for Saturn, and there was her picture of changing a flat tire in my own owner's manual. There's a picture of her adjusting her seatbelt in my owner's manual. So, you know, there was just a lot of coincidences that were just really unique.
So what do you, maybe that night of that 25th reunion that you described, sometimes like the night that you end up meeting your partner, it's certain things stand out. Do you have any memories of maybe, like, I don't know, the random details of that night? Like, do you remember what you were wearing? Or do you remember, you know, what she was doing when you saw her at the reunion for the first time? What song was playing? Do you remember anything like that?
Well, I remember that it was kind of funny with our class. Our class song was just one that guys did not like whatsoever. And, you know, here we were talking, getting to know each other, and they played our class song, and one of the guys stood up at a table and said, "We did not choose this song. I still want to revote." You know, so they wanted a revote from 25 years ago. So that always sticks in my mind. I'm trying to carry on a conversation with her, and some guy stands up and starts yelling at how bad their class song was. Barry Manilow, "Looks Like We Made It."
Well, that would have thrown a lesser man off his game, I feel like. So just kudos to you for keeping the ship afloat.
The game was going on.
Yeah. What about your courtship after that? You meet at this reunion, and maybe you guys make plans to see each other again. How long were the two of you dating before you decided to get married? And what about even that idea of, like, the proposal? Do people know that story?
Well, you know, the first time we ended up, she came to Chelsea. I wanted to give her an idea of what Chelsea was like, and I thought that a real good way to do that was to have her come for Halloween. And I've always loved the students of Chelsea and their Halloweening. Mm-hmm. I would have 300 students stop by when I lived over in Lanewood. Mm. And it was just student after student, and I wanted to give her an idea of how unique that was. Mm-hmm. So that was the very first time she ever saw Chelsea. Mm. And then when we were dating, and we had a Super Bowl party, and so she was able to meet quite a few people at the Super Bowl party. Mm-hmm. And then we also, I proposed to her at a prom. Just before we went to prom, I proposed to her, and then we went out to eat, and we went to prom, and everybody heard about it, and everybody was excited about that.
At a Chelsea, before Chelsea High School prom?
At the Chelsea High School prom,
okay,
yes.
Okay, wow.
Yes.
I did not know that. That's very exciting.
Oh.
So now, years later, you both end up working in the same building in Chelsea, and what's that like? What's it like to work in the same building as your spouse?
Well, kind of like when we were in high school. I'm in the math wing, she's in the art department. I never see her.
Okay.
So we don't really see each other until when we come home. We may communicate every now and then. I know what her schedule is, so if I need to hunt her down and ask her a question, I can go find her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But that's about it.
Hmm. And now you two have been married, I think, pretty much as long as I've been in the building. Are you getting close to 15 years or so? Is that about right?
Yes. It was 7304. Equals 3 plus 4. So it's always easy for a math person to know.
Okay. That's excellent. Yeah, time goes by in the blink of an eye. I remember my first day at Chelsea High School. It was a professional development, like preschool staff meeting. And I remember people were talking, I think, about your wedding. It was a summer wedding, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
So I remember people talking about that, and everyone kept telling me, like, you don't understand. Like, this guy is the greatest guy, and we're so happy about this wedding. And I had heard about your legendary Super Bowl parties and things like that, so that reputation kind of preceded you. But I remember your wedding being, like, the talk of the school over that specific summer when I started.
It was fun. It was fun. We had quite a few teachers and administrators at the wedding.
Yeah. And I know that Super Bowl party came up in your answer there. For me, triggered some throwback Thursday kind of memories, because I know I got a chance to witness a couple of those. And I don't think that those are really like a secret. I think students have heard stories about your Super Bowl parties. But for people that were never able to get to one, what made a Mr. Mitchell Super Bowl party special or unique?
Well, I think the neat thing about the Super Bowl party was that it started to be something that everybody would look forward to, and so they knew the process. Mm-hmm. You bring food, and I mean, food was a huge aspect of the Super Bowl party, and just coming up with stupid things so that it wasn't just a football game. It was also, will the next commercial have a dog in it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was, and then there would be stupid bets on those types of things.
Mm-hmm.
And just the opportunity to do things that were involved both so that women could enjoy the game as much as men, non-football players could, or sports fans could enjoy it as much as mm-hmm. regular sports fans. Mm-hmm. We had so many stupid things going on during the game that, will the next person who makes a tackle be an odd number or even number?
Right.
And it was just stupid things to just shout out, and who cared about the football game? We mm-hmm. just had so much fun.
Right, because the Lions were never in it.
The
so
Lions were never
had
in it, surprisingly.
Interest.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and you employed a lot of teachers. Like, I think Mr. Arlandi was noted. Did he do the bets, like the odds making, or was he running a poker table, if I remember?
I don't recall any of that myself.
Okay.
I don't know any about that, anything like that.
I
do recall Mr. Orlandi being there. I do recall Mr. Swagger being uh-huh. there and coming up with a lot of the stupid bets that uh-huh. are just hilarious.
Sure. I can still kind of hear his voice yelling out the most absurd sorts of things and people cheering because either it came true or didn't.
Yes. Like, will the word "the" be on the screen at the next commercial? And people would just scream and holler if it was on there.
Well, I know that many of us loved those Super Bowl parties, and we have great memories of those too. Well, we're going to move into our final topic of discussion for today, and that is our Friday question of the day. Basically, a open-ended question that I always ask my students, and for the podcast, I give Mr. Mitchell the chance to ask me. So, go ahead.
Well, I've always wanted to ask an English teacher this. If you ever ask a teacher who's at the elementary schools and so on, one of the biggest topics for the elementary's curriculum is whether or not cursive should be taught. So my question to you, Mr. Zania, as an English teacher, is let's say that cursive is no longer taught. Would you bring it back in? Now, remember that anytime you add something, you have to subtract something or it doesn't fit into the curriculum.
That's the math teacher.
That's the math teacher coming there. So my question to you is, if you did say that cursive has to be brought back in, what do you throw out? And first of all, do you want cursive back in?
Well, I do have a soft spot in my heart for cursive. I remember learning cursive letters in second grade, back when I was in elementary school. And I can even remember the first letter that I wrote in cursive. It was a letter to Joe Dumars. And Joe Dumars was a guard for the Detroit Pistons, the bad boys teams in the late 80s and early 90s. He was like the one bad boy who was actually a really good person. They named the sportsmanship award in the NBA the Joe Dumars Award. So that gives you an idea, I think, of like what sort of guy he was. And he was my idol growing up. So I loved Joe Dumars. I wanted to act like him, play basketball like him. And in second grade, I wrote a letter to Joe Dumars. And I remember the first sentence of the letter said, "Dear Mr. Dumars, this is the first letter I've ever written in cursive." And I think as a, you know, a teacher who teaches leads and introductions for a living, like, I think that's a pretty darn good hook.
Yeah, because I think you got him right there.
Yes, he's going to open that letter and the heart is just going to melt. And he ended up sending me back an autographed basketball card, even though I didn't include one in the letter. I mean, that's just the kind of guy that he was. But anyway, so I have that soft spot in my heart for cursive. I think that beyond just the beauty of it, I think it's a really pretty kind of script to look at. I think it's also very functional. I was always taught that cursive allows you to write more quickly. You don't have to pick up your pencil every time you start a new letter. So everything is very connected. And so I think it's got practical applications as well as aesthetic applications. I think that I write a lot of my comments in cursive, and so I worry that there's going to be a day, or maybe it's already coming, when my students can't really understand what I'm writing on their essays because it's in this foreign language that they never learned. So I worry a little bit about that, and I just even think about basic things like signing your name on a check or signing your mortgage someday. I watch students take the SAT, and the last page asks them to sign and then print their name. And students nowadays just consider those to be synonymous. Or what's the difference between these two? And some of them literally struggle to sign their name in cursive. And I think that that's a little scary to me sometimes. So I think for all those reasons, I would like to see cursive make a comeback. And then in terms of what do we give up? I don't know, that's difficult. I think we've cut a lot of things out of our English curriculum in past years that I don't know, maybe it's the old school nature of me that liked learning about parts and parts of speech and knowing how to diagram a sentence so that when I go to write sentences by myself, I kind of know the pieces of language that I'm working with. I think we don't teach that very much anymore. And maybe that's something that that we miss. But I don't know, I would just have to think that you kind of put me on the spot there, but there could maybe be a short story or a set of poems that we might be able to eliminate, since they are going to get a lot of repetition with those things over their 12 years of schooling. Like, maybe in 1 year, we could take a couple weeks out of that unit to get them back writing cursive once again.
All right, that's a good answer.
But what do you think? I always make my students answer the same question.
I honestly don't have an opinion on that because I'm mostly dealing with numbers. And so I've seen some real good handwriting that is printed, and I see some real good handwriting that is in cursive. I've seen some bad both ways, mm-hmm. where I have to translate it. When they end up having to write a paragraph down, mm-hmm. I'll have to figure out what it is. Mm-hmm. So I've seen it both ways. It's just always interesting to talk about it with elementary teachers. Mm-hmm. It is such a hot topic mm-hmm. that, and when you talk to a lot of the adults that didn't know that cursive is going away, they're just stunned. They just, you can't take that away. You mm-hmm. can't. So I don't know what the age difference is. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're 50 years old, you got to keep cursive. If mm-hmm. you're 25 years old, you think that you don't have to keep cursive. So mm-hmm. where's the boundary? Where's mm-hmm. the border?
Yeah. Well, I think that's just a general. It's human nature. Anytime something changes from the way it was when you were younger, it's unfamiliar. And we all, I think, in many cases, look back positively on the way things were when we grew up. And so I can certainly understand that stress or anxiety. I'm curious from a math perspective. I know handwriting's a little different when you're doing numbers as opposed to letters. But is there such a thing as someone who has bad math handwriting?
Well, a lot of times we have to have them explain how they got their answer. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times in math corrections, they have to explain where you went wrong and how did you get the correct answer. And it mm-hmm. has to be in paragraph form. And boy, there are some times they have a tough time trying to figure out what they're saying.
What about the other side? Is there ever a student that stood out as making the most perfectly formed numbers you ever saw and just loved to look at their paper because it was so neat and pristine and precise?
Oh, you see that more than you think. Mm-hmm. You definitely do. And a lot of times they want to turn in a perfect paper. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really do. And then when they end up, like I'll have an extra credit on the end, I'll talk about what are things that you like about Chelsea, and mm-hmm. they'll come up with a great paragraph, and it's really well written, and it's beautifully written, and mm-hmm. you just tell they spent a lot of time, probably spending more time on that than the math itself.
Yeah. Well, maybe one final question here. I know you asked me about cursive as this sort of antiquated thing in the English realm, and there's got to be a math equivalent, maybe like long division, or some people would even argue with the advances in calculators and things like multiplication, simple multiplication. We can just sort of outsource that to computers or to calculators. Do you think that those sort of basic functions of math are still important to learn to do by hand without the aid of a computer? Or should
we? It is very relatable because, you know, when I first started teaching, it was illegal to have a calculator in the math class. Mm-hmm. You were not going to do that. And it probably was in the early 90s when they finally changed the philosophy on that. You know, you sit there and say, well, you don't know what 6 times 8 is, so therefore you can't go any further in algebra. Mm-hmm. Well, the fact is, you can go further than that in algebra. Don't make that stop you. Mm-hmm. And so there's always the philosophy of, you know, the calculators. Finally, we got away from that. There were some older teachers that really did not want calculators in the classroom at all. Mm-hmm. And so finally, we no longer have that. I always have to be up to date with what's going on with the calculators and the technology and so on. Mm-hmm. And I'm all in favor of that. Mm-hmm. I really did. You know, as far as the memorization, I don't like it. Mm-hmm. I don't like it. If you want to use a calculator to find out what 6 times 8 is, mm-hmm. go right ahead. Mm-hmm. You should know it, but if you don't, go right ahead. Mm-hmm.
Well, before we go, I appreciate you giving up some of your time today for us to hear a little bit more of wisdom from you, insight into your teaching philosophies and some of the things that you love and find interesting. I love that, hearing those things. And I just feel like I would be remiss if I didn't ask one final question.
Oh, boy.
What's the best barbecue in Texas?
Oh, boy. The best barbecue that I have seen so far, I believe it was called Salt Lick in Dallas. Hmm. But there are some that are in the Austin area and Franklin area. There's no such thing as bad barbecue. That's mm-hmm. number one. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of these are the places you got to hit if you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So those are the ones. Bodacious is good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what makes Texas barbecue different from any other barbecue around the world?
Well, the Texas mostly deals with the cow. And, you know, if you're talking about Kansas City, they're mostly going to be dealing with the hog. So it's really the animal itself. Texas deals a lot with brisket. Whereas in Memphis, you're dealing with the wet rubs of the mm-hmm. ribs, and And in other places, you're dealing with the dry rubs and so on. Mm-hmm. So, and I just, the Carolina stuff with the mustard, that there's just something wrong with that. Uh-huh. The vinegar and the mustard, there's just something wrong with that.
All right, well, we finally got you to say something bad about someone or something on the podcast. So I think that's the sign that we need to wrap it up. So we appreciate your time, and we just really cherish what you contribute to Chelsea High School and this community. I know you're a very valued, well-respected member of our community. So thank you for everything that you do.
Well, I appreciate you talking. I appreciate the students and the former students. Hello for those of you who I teach or have taught in the past. And I'm kind of surprised you made it this long to listen to all of this.
Yep, some of them do. We have some great kids. So we appreciate it. We hope that this podcast gave you a better window into the life of a member of our Chelsea High School community, and we invite you to turn into future episodes of Teacher People. And we want to remind you one last time to remember that your teachers are people too. Thanks for listening.